B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Game, the big game that it was from last night. So Mark will join us at 9:20. But here is one of the big quotes from last night, because it wasn't just that they lost the game on the court. They lost the conversation as well. Going into the game, we played it for you earlier, Charles Barkley talked about how this team was like the Cleveland Browns in that they had a lot of talent going into the season. They were supposed to be some kind of juggernaut team. I still don't think the Cleveland Browns are supposed to be as good as the Sixers were in basketball, but whatever. That's the comparison Chuck made yesterday. And then at halftime, Shaquille O'Neal laid into Joel Embiid. Now, here's a cut I want to play here real quick. It's play-by-play from the second quarter. And this kind of summed up where the Sixers were and where the Bucks were with their stars, so to speak, with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Joel Embiid, with Giannis getting a putback jam here. Take a listen to Tom McGinnis.
Baseline right, Bledsoe. They inbound to Middleton. Middleton spins on Ben in the lane. Embiid is there. No good. Giannis tips it, though, and Antetokounmpo over the back of Embiid scores the ball. 18 points for Antetokounmpo, 4 for Embiid.
18 for Giannis at that point, 4 for Joel Embiid. Cool. Didn't get much better after that. JoJo ended up, scoring some points and some threes. Fine. You need a little bit earlier in the game as well.
Yeah.
So it did not go well. So no. At halftime, Shaquille O'Neal laid into Joel Embiid. Listen to this.
Giannis is playing with 4 seconds. Embiid is playing SOF capital T. Right here. I'm saying, you know what? I'm not shooting no jumpers. I'm going right at you. Kevin McHale move right there. I don't care who you are. And look, I'm just going at you right now. I'm taking it to your chest. You're 7 foot, so am I, but you're still too little. Jump hooking to death. And right here on the other end, he's not playing with force. He's looking for the foul. He has a little band-aid on his little hand. He wants the ref to call the foul. The ref don't call the foul, so he runs back on defense like a little baby, and then you let this guy score on you. I'm not being harsh.
Was he being harsh, Trey?
No.
Yeah, didn't capital N.
Brutally honest, I would assume.
It really does amaze me the frustration that you hear in Shaquille O'Neal's voice, the frustration you hear in Charles Barkley's voice when they're talking about Joel Embiid. It's like they're invested. It's like they're fans. It's like they're one of us that watches them every night. They're not. They're just frustrated at a level of, my God, this guy has unbelievable talent. He doesn't know how to use it. The fact that they're that upset that that Joel Embiid's play elicits that much reaction from them, that's so damning on him. These guys aren't invested in the Sixers at all. They're pissed off that this guy is playing their game at a half-assed level.
Well, Charles is invested in the
Sixers.
He's the only one that's financially.
Really invested.
And maybe emotionally.
Yeah.
And at least Joel Embiid. Let's get to Charles in Northeast. Hey, Charles.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey.
Good work, guys. I just want to say, first off,
I appreciate. Hey, you know what, Charles? Real quick, I just want to. I do want to give a shout out here because a guy reached out to us on Twitter and gave us a really a nice tweet here. My shout out goes to Anthony, who's on his way to chemotherapy, and he has us on the podcast. He has us on the stream, so he's streaming us right now while he's getting chemo. Anthony, good luck to you, man. God bless you and
go
your family.
Go get him, man.
Yes, go get him, brother. Charles, I'm sorry about that, buddy. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. I heard you guys are having Mark Jackson in as a guest speaker in a little bit shortly, right?
Yeah, we're having him as a guest at 9:20, yeah.
Okay, I had an argument earlier this season about coaching because I said the Sixers are never going to make it to pass what they did last year unless they get a different type of coach. Guys got mad at me because I had chose Mark Jackson, even though he's a point guard. That's where he played.
This is Mark Jackson, who used to play with the Sixers and Temple University.
Mark Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking you were talking about Mark Jackson from Temple.
No.
Okay.
Mark Jackson. Yeah.
My apologies. I thought you were talking about the other Mark Jackson.
No, this is the one that spells his name with a C, just to differentiate.
Okay.
And he's a little taller.
Oh, okay. I was just saying that the other Mark Jackson would be a great coach because he played so fiercely when he was a point guard, he wouldn't accept nothing less from Joel Embiid, just like Shaq says, you know, playing real soft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the biggest, strongest guy, the biggest force in the league right now, and he should make his presence felt, first off. A while back, I had called and I talked to Dee Lynam, and I had told her that, you know, when you work a job and your boss is telling you to do something, it requires you to do something, you don't do it, it's insubordination, you could be fired.
Mm.
I said, you know, Ben asked if, BB asked if, Ben, you give me 1 3-pointer a game. And he hadn't done it. You know, I was like, so I would bench him because everything he's doing, he's a great player. I wouldn't trade him, I wouldn't trade him B. I would hurt him. I would sit him down on the bench because there's hungrier guys that's sitting on the bench waiting for their shot to play. You know, even though still it may cost us a losing season or it may hurt us, but what you're doing, in my opinion, is hurting the team. You know, because you got to make the defense honest. You know, take a mid-range shot. You know, play with some heart. You know, you got this big 7-foot guy down here below. Tell him you're running the ship. Tell him to go down low, and I'm gonna toss you the ball. That's all you guys got to do. You know, but you know, I'm only a fan, not a coach. I only play high school ball, so you know, I may not know exactly what it is to be an NBA player.
It's not. I'm gonna tell you right now, Charles. It's not that hard. And thanks for the call, man. I'm not saying that the pro game is just like the high school game, but basketball is basketball. If you have a player that has the athletic ability and the talent to take over a game, and he can't get out of his own way, which is what it seems like right now. Like, if you're Joel Embiid, how do you accept even the idea, even if it's not the reality, but just the idea that Ben Simmons isn't giving you the ball enough? Like, between you and Al Horford, you had 22 threes last night. You had your ball. You had your hands on the ball. Like, go down to the block if you have to. Like, oh, I got to stay around the perimeter because other guys want to drive the lane. Well, there are plenty of instances last night where you shot threes and there was nobody in the paint. Where Ben Simmons would give you the ball on the perimeter and you'd shoot the three. Nobody underneath. You could have established yourself down low, but instead you didn't do that. Now, if he's being told flat out, don't do that, that's dumb, that's on Brett. But if you're a guy that can impose your will on the post, go down there and do it. If you get fouled, you go to the line. You're a good free throw shooter. What's the big deal here? What's the problem? It's basic basketball. It's fundamental basketball. Yet you aren't seeing these guys really just execute on the court. It's not that difficult.
And if he's staying out of the lane because he doesn't want his hand getting beat up and hit and all that stuff, and he wants to shoot jump shots, well, then you can't be in the game. Like, you got to sit. You can't hurt the team on the floor by not being able to do something that you really need to do to make this team better.
Yeah, I don't know. Trey, I don't know what you do with a player that has so much ability, has so much talent, and then just mentally, he seems to be screwed. Like, that's what it looks like right now when I watch him play.
Absolutely. I mean, he's somebody, you know, you're hoping that, as a coach, you want to say whatever you can to help him snap out of it. But really, it's going to have to come from within. This is a decision that he's going to have to make. Because you go back and you look at how he played against the Lakers. He played inspired. He played like he had a little fire behind him. He was sprinting up and down the court. You know, he scored 24 points. I mean, he came out there. He was on fire. That was a game that he wanted to play in. But then after that, it just kept dwindling down. Each game kept a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. And then here we are.
Well, he responded last time Shaq and Charles, you know, criticized him for one game, like Trey said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So does that mean tonight he comes out and sets the world on fire?
No, you think he plays tonight?
I have no idea, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it would make sense that it's kind of a load management night for him.
Look, we made a big deal of that.
But the Grizzlies are hot.
Yeah, but we played a big... But they just lost Andre Iguodala. So
who they hated.
But listen, after that conversation with Chuck and Shaq...
He placated them.
He admitted it in his Players Tribune article.
100%.
He's like, I respect Chuck and I respect Shaq, but I'm going to play the way I want to play. Yeah. And it's like, great. Like, those two guys, two of the best of all time, are trying to help you out in the post and impose your will.
But he did it so that he could be like, ha-ha, see, I listened. Look how great I am.
Yeah, now you don't want to do it again. That's stupid.
Consistency has always been his problem. From performance, no great player has a zero-point game. I can't get over that. From being in shape, out of shape, injured, not injured, performance, consistency, joking to going to dark, solemn, you know, Joe... Everything about him is inconsistent. Everything.
That's a great analysis right there.
Yeah.
That really is good.
And it sucks.
Now, you surprise me sometimes.
Thanks, Bob. There's a couple brain cells left in there.
Good for you. I'm happy for you. You know what we haven't even mentioned yet was the other thing that was said last night. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Reggie Miller.
He was going a little much.
Reggie Miller felt like I could be more, I could dump on the Sixers the longer this game goes.
When he started critiquing Joel's bench positioning.
That was awesome.
I was like, all right, Reggie, shut up.
He was like, he started off with, I don't know if the Sixers have what it takes tonight. And then by the end, it was like, wow, the Sixers are the worst team I've ever seen in the history of the NBA.
He goes, your best player's got to be sitting in the middle of the bench. What's he doing down there? The body language is horrible.
But somewhere in the middle.
Like, Reggie, you don't watch the Sixers. It's where he's always set.
Somewhere in the middle of all that, Reggie Miller said, well, I guess they owe Jimmy Butler an apology.
Yeah, he did in third quarter.
Because they thought it was his fault. Or they thought he was the problem.
Joel Embiid didn't think that. A lot of the fans didn't think that.
95% of the fan base? Like, I was campaigning for Elton Brand to like walk onto the midcourt and just hand Jimmy Butler a max contract and just be done with it. I don't know where he got that from, but it was dumb. Coming up, we'll speak to Mark Jackson when we come back here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, coming up anyway, we're going to talk to our good friend Mark Jackson, but we do have to give the Big Sexy Report brought to you by Delilah's Gentlemen's Club and Steakhouse, always on top. I mentioned it earlier, this Jessica Simpson story, she did this interview, I believe it was out on the West Coast, where she talks about her book, and in the book, she says that John Mayer, her former boyfriend, was in fact a freak, as highlighted by Jamie Lynch weeks ago.
Yeah, he carries around a backpack full of sex toys.
So there's that.
Yeah. Jennifer Aniston was a fan. That's how I learned about it.
Wait, what? She was a fan of his or of the bag?
Of his freakiness and skills in the boudoir.
So then Tony Romo, when she was dating Tony Romo, became jealous that, I think they dated for like 2 years, that Jessica would from time to time meet up with John Mayer.
we all know what that means.
But they would just casually bump into each other because they remained friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sure.
Is this the one thing that everyone in Philadelphia will be on Tony Romo's side for? All right.
Hey, you got the Monster 250?
Got the jackrabbit in there?
Yeah. Hi, I got batteries.
Got the double A Monster?
So,
did you bring the C batteries?
I've only got 9 volts. Don't lick it.
So that.
And you ever lick a 9 volt when you were a kid?
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. No, because if people are like, it shocks you if you lick it. I'm like, then I'm not going
to
lick it.
Oh, no, you had to try it.
No, screw that. I was never going
to
do it.
Yeah, I used to do that.
That
explains a lot about us.
Do you ever eat paint chips as a kid?
No, why?
I still can't feel the tip of my tongue.
So apparently she would meet up with John Mayer, but never cheated on Tony Romo.
Okay.
Right. All right.
Sure, Jess.
Whatever. So then, while she was still married to Nick Lachey, apparently she would be texting with Johnny Knoxville while she'd be in bed with her then husband, Nick Lachey. And apparently it was quote unquote emotionally cheating on her husband. Meaning, supposedly no hibbity dibbity, just like emotional support from this person or a flirtatious relationship that never escalated to the point of a physical touch. But all this stuff came out about her, and Tony Romo supposedly got upset over it because she would see her ex-boyfriend, John Mayer. And yeah, I don't know who she's married to now, but supposedly she, I think, lives in like the Boston area and just kind of chills out and is like happy to be out of the spotlight, although now trying to get back into the spotlight a little bit. Huh. And now she's a mom. She just wants to be a mom.
That's good.
But yeah, there was some freaky stuff that came out about
And her. if you want to see something funny,
yeah,
look, Google her on the Ellen DeGeneres show. She is smashed out of her mind.
I like how you had that right at the top of your head.
Well, it's because the other day that when you know, like, I came across it the other day, and there was a video attached, and she was smashed.
Ooh,
yeah,
good time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they take that show at like. Not until 10 in the morning or something. So.
Good times. 610-632-0975. Let's get to, who do we have? We have Mike and Ridley. What's going on, Mike?
Yeah, I think I have a different perspective a little bit. You know, it's a lot of pollen on the Sixers going on right now.
Yes.
And to me, it's getting a little corny to me, just a little bit. Like, nationally, it seems like Reggie, I feel like people are reaching just a tiny bit. Joel Embiid had a bad game last night. You know, I'm never going to trade him or Ben Simmons, so you can miss me with that. That's the slow GM, and that's the slow thought process.
Okay.
I'm going to change the GM. I'm going to change the coach before I do anything like that. I mean, I watched Joel Embiid his whole career, like us, all of us. To me, it's pretty clear he's hurt or something's going on with him. I agree with Bob. Maybe he needs to sit down because he doesn't look like himself at all. My bigger issue, his big issue with this team, I feel like through the entire season, and it's clear to me, he's frustrated and over the fact that there's no point guard on this team to get him the ball. Okay? The Sixers can't get him the ball down low in the post because they don't have a guy that can get the spots to get him the ball. I understand demand the ball and all that or whatever, whatever. When you're 7 foot that size, you need a guy that can get you the ball.
Mm.
And what they did is they needed shooting last year. We remember Jimmy Butler wasn't a great shooter. You had J.J. Redick in the playoffs. He was taken out of the series. So they replaced those two with another center power forward.
Mm-hmm.
So shrunk his court. So that's why his numbers are down. You know what I mean? It's not really. So I'm going to defend him a little bit. I know it's everyone's piling on. That's the thing to do. I'm going to defend him. My ear is either Brett Brown's system. That is a question.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a big issue. Okay, let's see what he does this year. If this team doesn't end up in the Eastern Conference Final, he has to go. But one issue that's not leaving this team is Ben Simmons and his lack of, you know, ability to shoot and playmate.
Yeah, and it's something that we know he has the ability to do. The fact that he chooses not to do it is what's most dumbfounding about it. And, you know, to help us break it down and understand what the heck's going on even further is our good friend Mark Jackson, NBC Sports Philadelphia Sixers pre- and post-game analyst and former Sixer himself on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Mark, good morning, brother.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
In life, great. In Sixer fandom, terrible. What? I can't think, Mark, I honestly can't think of a worse four-game losing streak where the Sixers not only took L's on the court and bad L's on the court, but took L's off the court as well. What is going on? How do you sum up the demise of the Sixers right now?
Listen, losing brings out the worst in people. It really does. It brings out the worst in personalities, demeanors. And, you know, it just exposes you. Winning cures everything. The problem here is the team's not winning. They're not winning. And as you notice, I took to last night. Okay, they lost a very good team, Milwaukee Bucks. We know what they have. We know what Milwaukee is. But for me, I've seen the last couple of games, I've been seeing just this body language. I'm a big fan of body language is how you can really justify what's going on. I'm seeing too much bad body language with the 76ers.
Who does that fall on, Mark? Does it fall on just the players? Is there more to it than that? Is that directly related to the coach, to their anxiety with the coach? What do you think it's all about?
No, the body language, when you're disappointed in your performance, when you're losing, has nothing to do with the coach. You know, because I'm a big fan of the coach's job is to put you in places to succeed, but when you're on that court, you got to do your job. And whether schemes or schematics, all that is very relevant, but it's dysfunction going on. And I don't like to use that word, the Sixers, because I don't think they have any bad guys, but I think the losing is just wearing on a bunch of winners. Mm-hmm. Al Horford is a winner. Josh Richardson is a winner. You know, I think it's just wearing on them. And they're new in this locker room. They're not used to seeing this element. And when you come into a situation for the first year, or not as a Tobias, but Josh Richardson and Al Horford, and you didn't like the way things were going, even when you were winning. And now that you're losing, it just frustrates you.
Mm. So how does that happen, though, where the new guy, where the leadership role is so available, the guy that's here 20 minutes comes in and takes those reins?
Agree. This team needs a leader. And I'm not a big fan of people saying the best players leave. No, it's not. I don't believe that. Just because you're the best player on the team don't mean you're a leader. You can be a horrible individual. Not saying the Sixers are, but I mean, I've been on teams where the best player is freaking scumbag. You know what I mean? So that's just a fact. So it's not about that. And sometimes it's the media. Sometimes we like to paint that guy. Oh, he's the best player. He's the franchise player. He got to be the leader.
Right.
We have to put this in perspective. Some people that are great at some things are not good people. And I'm not talking about the Sixers. I'm just talking about, in general, how we like to broadcast the best players, the best player is the leader. And that's not the case here. I think Al Horford, I think Josh Richardson, those guys got to step up. Tobias, they want to take that reins. It's out there for the taking. Go take it.
Yeah. So who was the scumbag you played with that was a leader?
Oh, I can't say that.
I know. I'm just kidding. So I know you played on teams that certainly had their struggles, but who do you look to right now as the guy? Like, can Brett Brown be a guy as a head coach to turn this around?
Yes, he can. He can find things to do with the pieces he has for his puzzle to make it complete. But a lot of times, as you know, sometimes we have puzzles that we don't figure out. And I don't put this. I'm not about to pile on. Put all this on Brett Brown. Yes, he has a major piece of this pie, but it's a bunch of guys on that court too that need to help figure it out. And sometimes the players can figure it out. And you know, sometimes these players only meetings can bring some light to a situation. Everyone is involved. Everyone's open-minded. But sometimes these players only meetings can come in and you get nothing accomplished. It can actually make things worse. But with this team, I think it hopefully makes it better. But you know, when I'm hearing this thing, this function, Al Horford mentioning something in the paper media about the leadership, Joel Embiid, I'm trying to find my fit in this team. This is, come on, man. That's not helping no one. You making these comments to the media instead of keeping an intern in-house, it's not helping no one. It's making the situation worse. Because, believe it or not, as athletes, we can say we don't read the papers. We can say we don't listen to the radio. We listen. Believe me. We listen, we read. And with that being said, it's important that you kind of try to keep as much fuel out of the fire as the media that you can put out there. Keep it to yourself, man. It's very important. It's very important. And sometimes guys are reaching out for attention. Like for Joel, respectfully, I love him. He's a great player. But let me say, I'm trying to find my fit in this team. Come on, man. Come on. That's ammunition for everybody. Why you throw that out there like that? I didn't see the importance of that.
Yeah.
Mark, what would you do with this team on the floor now? Now, you have the addition of Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III, which is nice shooting that you can probably bring off the bench. But we've seen the struggle with Horford. We see that something has to change. What would you do to this team on the floor to make that change?
Me personally, if I'm the head coach?
Yeah.
If I'm the head coach, do I have a healthy Josh Richardson?
Yeah.
Okay, I have a healthy Josh Richardson. I'm cutting Al's minutes down. I'm cutting Al's minutes down. I'm cutting Joel's minutes down. I'm dropping Joel to 30 minutes, which, you know, you may say that's 30 minutes that help keep him for the season, help keep him healthy. And I'm big on efficiency. You know, I think if Joel can get down to 30 minutes, 31, 32 minutes max, that'll leave 18 to 20, 24 minutes for Al to come in and Al to play with Joel, maybe only 4 minutes a game. But the other 18, he's the lone center out there, which means I'm finding time out there for Alec Burke. I'm finding time out there for Glenn Robinson III and Josh Richardson. I'm playing these guys major minutes, and I'm going, we're going to play flea. We're going to get out. We're going to run and gun. But I think us trying to fit Al, the verdict is out to me. Al being a four-man with Joel on the court and with Ben on the court is not working. It's not working.
Yeah.
I'm over it now. I'm over trying to fit it in. So I know, because the amount of money we give to Al, we got to say, oh, Al needs to be out here for 30 minutes. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. He can be the best player at his position on his role. So for me, I'm cutting Al's minutes down. I'm cutting Al's minutes down to 24. 18 of those minutes will be while Joel's not on the floor. I'm playing a smaller lineup, meaning with Al at the five when Joel's off the court, and I'm playing these other guys that we're going to play. And I'm putting Ben in a lot of pick and rolls when he's the picker and the roller.
Mm.
I'm doing a lot of that.
I need to see that. That's for sure.
I'm doing a lot of that to help open it up with the spacing and make it a little faster.
Look, that's what we're all going to be rooting for tonight. Hopefully they have a good win tonight, an easy win tonight. But I feel like that's going out on a limb against even the Grizzlies. But Mark Jackson, thanks so much for coming on with us, man. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, brother. Good talking to you.
Good thanks, talking Mark. To you too, man. Appreciate it. Mark Jackson trying to solve that problem. Now, on the line with us, do you want to take it from here?
Oh, of course, why not?
Yeah, go ahead.
On the line with us, I present to you my former teammate, my man, Greg, Super Bowl champion Lewis.
J. Lou, welcome J. in, Lou. Man.
What's going on? What's going on, man?
All right.
Man.
Trey reached out to us yesterday, said, I think I can get us G. Lou. And I was like, I want to talk to G. Lou.
Of course.
And G. Lou, here you are. Congratulations on your Super Bowl championship. How was the parade for you?
It was surreal. It was exciting. I had my kids, my wife out there, just seeing that sea of red and everything. And the guys enjoyed themselves. So it was something special that I won't forget.
All right, now let's just cut to the chase and ask the hard question everyone wants to know.
Go right ahead.
Travis Kelce or Jason Kelce, who had a better Super Bowl speech? You're damn right. We asked the tough questions.
I'm going to go with Travis Kelce.
Oh, come on!
Jason Kelce did a hell of a job out there.
I hear you, man. So how is it, man, coaching one of the fastest receiving groups, core groups out there in the game?
It's exciting. It's fun to come to work every day, just being around those guys and how they work. I mean, obviously they have speed, but just their work ethic and the love they have for the game, it's easy to coach these guys and when they just go out and make things happen.
Yeah. Andy Reid, what was he like in the locker room after the game? He had some great quotes in his post-game news conferences, his day after news conference. What was it like to party with your former head coach?
It was awesome. It was awesome just to see the big smile on his face, see him cut loose a little bit and just enjoy the moment, because you're always around him. I've been around him for a while, and he's got that serious look on his face, and he's on the football, but just see him let his hair down and enjoy the moment was exciting for us.
Man, that's awesome, man.
G. Lou, there's been talk about Patrick Mahomes, you know, the greatest start to a quarterback maybe in the history of the game. What's it like watching him every day, and how much has he grown since he first broke into the league?
You saw it early on when he got here, although we had Alex just in him at practice and doing some of the things that he did as a rookie. And it just continues to grow. I mean, I think Kafka and Coach Reed and EB are doing a great job of bringing him along. And then he's just taking the reins and going out there and playing and allowing his skill set to show.
You've obviously coached with Doug Peterson. You've coached with Andy Reid. A lot of people just draw that parallel right away. Are they similar in their coaching styles?
I would say yes and no. I think each individual coach has his own style. I think coaches pull from who they've been around and what they've learned from different systems and different people. And Coach Reid obviously has been around a lot of coaches. And Doug has been around a lot of coaches, and they have some similarities, but they're obviously different coaches.
Of course. Speaking with Greg Lewis, Super Bowl champion wide receiver coach Greg
ESPY
Lewis.
ESPY award winning.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I got to give a man his props.
Of course.
You know, it is funny to see that this guy right here is over a segment. G. Lou.
Oh, yeah.
My man, G. Lou.
Yeah,
it wasn't that long ago that we were on the back of the plane.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes.
And he had Asante and Lito taking their shirts off down to their undershirts, ready to jump on him. What? Because G. Lou is around there. G. Lou is the master of, like, poking somebody. Like, where you, right. I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. And he's like, yeah, right there in your face. Oh, yeah. G. Lou had Lito and Asante take their shirts off. They down to their undershirts.
Uh-huh.
Ready to fight him.
Okay.
And it was all over.
Uh-huh.
G. Lou, go ahead and tell him. Yeah, what was this fight about?
No.
He was out of fish grease.
Fish grease.
Fish grease. Yeah. Had the boy back there hot.
Yeah.
And it was all about it. They were hood or not. It was
no.
The argument was only on if they hood or not. If they gangster with them.
Well, just out
hilarious.
Of curiosity. Just out of curiosity, may I ask, who was more hood?
Obviously G. Lou. He had them boys fire hot, man.
Wow.
Hilarious.
Why were you a little instigator there, G. Lou?
That's what I'm good at. I mean, I enjoy getting people fired up. And seeing what they're going to do and seeing how far you can take it.
You got to play to your strengths, G. Lou.
Wow.
Oh, man.
The more we learn.
Yeah, man. My man is Super Bowl champion now, man. Congratulations, brother.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, another congrats for me as well, but I got to ask you this. So you go out there and you have a very talented wide receiving core, actually, obviously, in Kansas City. Here in Philly, there was a multitude of problems with the wide receiving core and a lot of drops that this team had. How do you get it into a player's, like, is there any way as a coach you can coach up a player to, I don't know, either have more confidence or just be better talent-wise on the field? How do you get the best out of a player?
I think you allow guys to be who they are, and that gets the best out of them, in my opinion. When you try to put people in a box and make everybody the same, guys aren't used to that. And then they don't conform to that. Then they put pressure on themselves. And things don't work out the way you want them to work out for those type of guys. So allowing guys to be who they are, but within the confines of the offense or the defense or the special teams, I think gives guys opportunities to go out and play and make plays, whether it's receiver, running back, quarterback, O-line, D-line, any position. If you're allowed to let go and do what you do, I think you get the best out of guys.
Now I know if you're not going to tell me who's more hood, whether or not it's Asante Samuel or Lito Shepherd, was that
one? Yeah, man. Dude, it was hilarious, dude. I'm telling you, like, Big Red had to come back from the front of the plane. Like, to come back there to check and make sure everything was okay. The flight attendants had left because they felt like it was getting really heated. The vein was popping out of Lito's forehead. The Asante one dread that was up front was all the way to the side. You know, it had really...
I had Trey back there with me
through the
year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't going to let them jump on, but nah, it was just hilarious. Like, the flight attendants felt like, you know what, we got to go because it's getting real heated back here. And everybody taking off their shirts and everything. Oh, it was hilarious, man.
So, if you're not going to tell me, answer that question as to who's more hood, I know you're not going to give me too many details here, but I got to ask this. Because a guy that we remember you not butting heads with, but certainly having issues with here is a guy that we've had issues with, and that's Nelson Agholor. And that play, the game in Seattle, where he said afterwards he was thinking too much and all that. When you look back on that time here in Philadelphia, is there anything you would have done different in that scenario, or is there anything you could have done different to maybe coach him up a little bit more?
With Nelson?
Yeah.
Specifically Nelson? No, I've talked to Nelson, and that was one of my favorite guys to coach. It wasn't about butting heads. It was about misaligning, and we just didn't get the play right. We scored a touchdown on that play, so it was just a conversation between the coach and the player, or a face between the coach and the player. But as far as getting the most out of him, I mean, you coach guys differently, and you give them everything you got. And I want to say that Nelson gave me everything that he had, and he's given Philadelphia everything he has when he's out there. He's one of the guys that works extremely hard and wants to do the right thing in situations that came up with him that didn't work out, and then in situations that did work out. And that's what sports is all about. I mean, everything ain't going to be perfect every time you go out there. And I think he left it all out there for the city and got him a championship out there, and then we'll see where it goes from there for him. But I don't have any ill will towards any of the guys that I coached there or the organization. It was an opportunity for me, and it didn't work out. They moved on, I moved on, and we're still rolling.
Yeah, you're a Super Bowl champion. Yeah, it goes. Now, obviously, you played. You know, other than that SB that Trey mentioned and your apparent instigator analysis.
Master instigator.
Yeah. I get a trophy for that, too.
You were, up until Alshon Jeffrey caught a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, you were the only Eagles wide receiver to catch a touchdown pass in a Super Bowl. That's like a fun fact that I always remembered about you on that drive that we always go back to in 05. So what was it like to play in a Super Bowl then versus the way you got to it as a coach, even before winning? Just what was that whole experience like? How did it differ?
Well, let me just say this. I'm still the first receiver.
That's
great that he got one and all that. But playing in the Super Bowl, I mean, it's a little different because you were out there grinding, doing all the stuff, and out there with your teammates, and it's different from that perspective. But being a part of this championship here as a coach and being a part of helping Coach Reed achieve one of the goals that obviously he has set for himself and the organization, it's still special. It's still awesome to be a part of. And seeing your guys go out and perform on the offense in the receiver room, it felt like I was out there. I wanted to be out there with them. Obviously, I'm too old now. I don't want to get hit no more. So, but it's just a great feeling to be a part of. Obviously, I felt the agony of defeat in 05, and to see this side of it, I mean, it's awesome.
That's good.
Yeah. So, do you want to be a head coach one day? You want to be an offensive coordinator? What do you want to do long term?
Definitely. Looking forward to opportunities to be a coordinator, to be a head coach. And it's a process. It's a process that you have to go through. Been coached for 8 years now, so I'm learning all the behind the scenes stuff and how to interact with different people, X's and O's, all that. Small detail type stuff that you need to know to lead an organization. And if an opportunity presents itself, I'm excited for it.
Eric Bieniemy is a guy that is getting attention, but for some dumb reason, not a head coach yet at the NFL level. How good of a job did Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy do working together?
It's been awesome. Now, obviously, it culminated in a championship this season and a step away from being part of it. Last year, EB has come in and picked up where Nags left off and took us to the next level. And it's been exciting to see him grow as a coordinator, see Coach Reid grow as a head coach and continue to give guys opportunities to show what they can do and do what they do and get us to where we need to get to.
The other thing is another guy here, a former teammate of yours, Deuce Daly, in my opinion, got passed over again for a promotion. Should have been an offensive coordinator here in Philadelphia. Do you have conversations with Deuce? Does he talk about, you know, maybe taking the next step in his career as well?
Yes, I've talked to Deuce, and Trey probably talked to him more than me since he's right there with him. Mm-hmm. But it's frustrating at times for different guys and situations. But Deuce is a great coach. He got an opportunity to be the head coach down at one of the collegiate bowl games 2 years ago. So he got that experience. Getting passed over, I wouldn't say he got passed over. I would say the opportunity just didn't work out for him. There's plenty of people that know who Deuce Daly is and what he brings to the table. And he will get an opportunity, and he deserves the opportunity to go out there and be a coordinator, head coach type of guy because he has all the insight. From being around great coaches and his opportunity will come just like everybody. It's just a process that we have to deal with at this present time. And we just continue to grind. We don't let it stop us, how we work or how we approach our day to day, activities.
That's right. Awesome, man. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, I was like, man, G Lou, this is G Lou.
this is G Lou.
I was sitting, how the family doing though? How they taking it all in?
Wife is enjoying it. Kids enjoying it. These four kids, they running around. They was at the parade. I had to try to keep them bundled up. They love Kansas City. So they enjoying all the stuff. The wife is ready for me to get home and take care of these kids and give her a break, which I need to do.
Yeah.
Obviously this coaching profession takes a lot of time, mm-hmm. and our families suffer the most of time away from them, and my wife has done a tremendous job with helping with the kids and taking care of them, mm-hmm. and holding everything down. So now it's my turn to give back in this off season, give her some break, get her, let her do what she needs to do, let the kids get them in line, and then we roll.
Hey, now you know if you need me to babysit again, you know.
I might drop them. I might fly them out there to drop all four of them off.
G Lou dropped off one of his kids one time.
Uh huh.
And so I'm sitting up there playing with the baby, like, yeah. As soon as his wife left and closed the door, the baby started crying and didn't stop crying until she came back and got
Greg Lewis, one last thing for you. Did you happen to see Andy Reid get those cheeseburgers?
No, but I have seen him eat some cheeseburgers.
I don't doubt that. Greg Lewis, the first Eagles wide receiver to catch a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
SB Award winner for SB the touchdown. It was with the Vikings, a reception from Brett Favre.
From Favre.
Not too bad. And Super Bowl champion and champion instigator Greg Lewis. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Hey, take care of my guy Moorhead out there, too.
We've been shouting about Moorhead all day. He's a big hit already.
We're all about Moorhead.
G Lou, who doesn't love Moorhead? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. See, he supports Moorhead as well. G Lou's the man. Appreciate it. Time of the Fanatic, 946. Oh, sorry. I messed up.
What time is it, Mark? I miss that.
It's not. It's 9:46.
Oh, okay.
You call me with my pants down there.
Oh no.
Beg your pardon.
So we're,
we're not done yet.
No, we're not. I
apologize.
Four
more minutes.
I thought we were doing the two.
No.
Okay,
so we just
called G. Lou.
Yeah, so one time, you know, I was just chilling in, and, you know.
All right, so what really happened on that flight?
No, G. Lou, it was like, it was.
How did it start?
I don't know. We were, I don't know. G. Lou was messing with Lito.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about how we were in, when we went to hang out in Jacksonville somewhere, and we went to a club, and Lito was talking about how it's so hood there or whatever, and then, you know, G. Lou started messing with it. And G. Lou has a very special knack, and it's the way he talks to you and the way he looks at you. And he was like, and he would be like, man, stop acting like you so hood. You had to do the same thing I had to do. Get good grades and go to school, and you had to go to classes, and you had to maintain a GPA so you could play. So stop with all this hood stuff. And he was just kind of messing with him. And Lee Dolan and Asante getting all fired up, and, oh, man, you don't know what you're talking about. Ah. And he was like, well, man, that's you being stupid. If you out there... And, you know, he was like, man, your cats get shot all the time out there. He was like, well, why are you out there messing with people that have guns? And it was just the way G. Lou was kept stirring the pot with them.
Uh-huh.
Next thing you know, shirts are off. They down to their undershirts. And, you know, the vein is popping out of Lito's forehead. Asante flicking his dread. You know, and it was just, you know, it got heated. The flight attendants, they left. They ran out. They ran up front to go get Big Red. Big Red started making his way back. I kind of positioned myself between everybody to make sure that they didn't jump on him, because cats were hot.
Do you remember where you were going to play?
Nah, we were coming, but we were on our way back.
Did you win or lose that game? Do you remember?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't remember, chances are you won, because you don't remember wins.
But it was hilarious. Hilarious.
There is something to really be admired for the person that walks in, lights the fire, and then just backs away.
Yeah.
Like, I should look at that person and be like, you coward. Yeah. But I'm like, if I'm on that flight, I'm entertained. I'm like kicking my feet up, eating popcorn, watching all that unfold right in front of me.
And G. Lou was a master of it. Like, he would get cats all the time, and he would get you all fired up, and he would just sit there and just, I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. And cats would get all fired up. Oh, G. Lou, that's how he was, though, man. That's hilarious.
Like, he said all the right things when it came to Nelson Agholor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a good coach should do.
Sure. Right?
Good for him. But Nelson Agholor got him fired. I mean, that's the bottom line. Nelson Agholor cost Greg Lewis his job here in Philly, and then Mike Groh ended up coming up here, and then they ended up winning a Super Bowl. Whatever, it's fine. But, like, and he wins a Super Bowl for himself. So it worked out for everybody in the end, but... Mm-hmm. I'm impressed. Like, hey, look, he's got a future as a head coach. He's definitely got a future as a head coach, mm-hmm. if that's how he's going to answer those questions, because there's a page out of Andy Reid's playbook right there.
Yeah.
Out of his, answering questions playbook, that's one right there.
And even, too, now, you listen to some of the things that he said, that the best thing to the best way to get something out of a player is to let him be how he needs to be. And that was one of the things Big Red always preached to us. Hey, man, be whatever you need to be. Just don't get arrested, but be what you need to be.
I hate doing this because, you know, we love our team. We never stop loving them. We may call them out for when they disappoint us, and the Sixers have certainly disappointed us. Forget about a singular tool of the week. We got a whole squad of them. We got a whole roster. The 76ers are the Hall of True Value and Garden Center right on Ridge Pike in Lafayette Hill. They are the tools of the week, brought to you by Hall of True Value and Garden Center. It's not necessarily my takeaway of the day, but one more time, this was the mindset of Brett Brown going into last night's game against the Milwaukee Bucks. Here's Brett before the game. Take a listen.
Words don't matter. You know, it's like it's a show me league. And it should be that. And so tonight will be one of those things. Prove it. And I agree. And I expect that we will. We will come out and compete at a level. We're the fourth best defensive team in the NBA. You know, we have to play like that. And because of recent times, people forget that. I don't. I don't at all. I know what I coach. I know what I have. I know the character in the room. And that's what I'm hanging my hat on.
You might be looking at a team right now where character is the biggest issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the most unfortunate things about it. Because I believe this team has talent. Like, does anyone think this team doesn't have talent?
No.
I think there is a, I mean, we talk about mental blocks all the time. There's a mental block, it seems to be, right now with this Sixers team as a whole. Sam Wilson, we didn't do a Twitter poll today, but if we did, who brings us a fine Twitter poll?
Window Nation, take advantage of Window Nation's 50% off sale on all style windows, plus with no down payment, with no payments and no interest for 12 full months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Thank you very much. Takeaway of the day, Sam.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Jamie Lynch.
My takeaway of the day is that John Mayer once called Jessica Simpson sexual napalm.
What does that mean?
He said he would sell everything he had to continue his intimacy with her. She was that good.
I didn't know how to take that quote either.
Explosive.
Sexual napalm.
Love the smell of it in the morning.
Wow.
Bob Cooney.
Jamie just totally blew my mind with that one.
He napalmed your brain.
I just want you guys to know that whenever I want to go get something to eat, wherever I want to get it, I'm going to go there.
There you go.
I don't care what you guys
say. You're a man. You're a man, damn it.
Unless Donna says no.
Trey?
Hey, all right. TGIF.
Let's go, Sixers. My takeaway today is go Sixers. Get a win tonight against the Grizzlies. Stay tuned for the Anthony Gargano Show. Time of the Fanatic is 9:52.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.